Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
I can just imagine what is running through the mind of our next guest who's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He's with us every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. You look forward to it, as we all do. The one, the only, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, is here with us. I think Dave was just showing off for you right there, Michael.
What exactly was he showing off?
Oh, my skills of doing an update there. I don't know how you missed that. But it was phenomenal.
Did you have anything written down, or were you just sort of winging it?
It was fantastic.
Did you have anything?
I was kind of winging it. Yeah. I don't know if you could tell.
No, I know.
I got the internet machine in front of me.
Yeah. It's like 27-year-old Scott.
I think he starts to feel pressure on the days he knows you're waiting on hold. He's like, oh, boy. Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I never used to pay a single
Michael, we've been talking
attention
about
to it until he started bringing it up.
Well, I think you made a comment one day.
Yeah, Bob was gone, and you come on and go, you don't normally do the updates, do you, Wyman? And I'm like, yeah, you can tell.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your confidence. You're amazing.
Michael,
you're amazing.
No. I like the pressure.
Season pro. Hey, Michael, we were talking about the WBC, and just last night's game was electric. I don't know. Have you been invested in this? And if so, is it more so than in years past? Or how do you feel about the World Baseball Classic?
No, I like it. I haven't been watching a lot of it just because I haven't known when it's on. It hasn't been on my radar. Like, you know, a lot of games are going on in early mornings and late at night, and you know, I'm like, when's it playing? I can tell you it's on right now, and Trey Turner has hit his fifth home run. You might not know this, but he plays for those National League champion Philadelphia Phillies. So
we're aware.
This is scary, because if this game stays close, you know Ohtani's going to do something, like strike out 100 guys and hit six homers in one at bat or something. It's just going to be, it'll be crazy.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Last night we were watching it, and you know, there's a lot to choose from. We were at a sports bar, so there was like the women's tournament going on. There was hockey, but this was a really exciting game. And I guess kind of like you, Michael, I wasn't really into the WBC, and didn't really get like we're starting to get a sense for how much these players absolutely love it, because like for Matt Brash, he's a pitcher here who, you know, is going to possibly be able to crack into the starting rotation. And he was told, hey, you know, if you go to the World Baseball Classic and play for Canada, which he did, it's probably going to set you back a little bit. And he chose to do that. So, yeah, it's the players are really responding.
It's something we don't really understand here like other countries. You know, playing for a Dominican team, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, you know, Japan, the love that these folks have for playing for their country. I mean, talk to Jokic or Doncic and listen to them talk about what it means to them to play for their countries in the European Championships or in the Olympics, and they say it matters more than playing in the NBA. We always look at things as, well, the NBA, the MLB, you know, NHL, NFL, it's America. We're the best. Being the champion there, that's all that matters. Wrong. I'll tell you what, if somebody said to you, to Jokic, you can have one Olympic gold medal for your country or an NBA title, he would take the Olympic gold medal in a second.
You know, I've been talking about this tweet that I retweeted earlier, Michael, that this talks about the most viewed baseball games. Three of them involved Japan. So it was Japan versus the Oryx Buffaloes, had 36 million people watch it. Japan versus Korea, 55+ million watch that one. Japan versus Italy, 62.5 million. And the most watched World Series game was 54.5 million back in 1980. So they were talking about this game going on today could be the most watched baseball game in the history of the sport, which is...
Wait a second. 1980.
It speaks to,
who
you know, we get...
Who won that year in 1980?
Was it the Phillies?
Of course. That's why I was.
I left that part out. big omission on my part. I'm sorry.
Japan is nuts about baseball. Japan is nuts about two sports: sumo wrestling and baseball. And I'm not saying sumo wrestling facetiously. Sumo wrestling and baseball—they're crazy.
No, it's huge.
And these the chance for them to be on this stage, to be playing, these games for a world championship. The island will shut down. They'll take 2 days off. They'll all be going nuts for 2 days.
Yeah. So it's very interesting though. That what do you think this does for baseball? You know, the MLB, because you talk a lot about the fact that it's regional, but I don't know. Does this help? Because I don't think, first of all, that even though these players are, you know, there's a couple of guys that have gotten hurt. One was a very fluke deal, but the thing with Altuve is very real, and that could possibly happen. But I don't get a sense that that it's going to slow down. I feel like this thing's building momentum. The WBC,
it is, but I still don't think you're going to find Americans saying, "Boy, oh boy, when's the next WBC?" They're going to care about Major League Baseball, which starts next week. That's what's going to happen. I mean, and believe me, it's crazy. I was looking, saying, holy cow, we're almost in April. We're going to be seeing games in April. And then I thought, no, we're seeing games in late March. So the season starts, and then people will, if we finish first, second, whatever, everybody's going to go, is my team going to do well? Seattle fans will be saying, okay, we get back to the playoffs? Do we get past the, around this year? You know, what's our ceiling? Same thing with the Phillies. You know, I'm watching Trey Turner hit home runs for USA. It's tremendous. I love it. I'm like, yo, Trey, save some for the Phils. So, that's my concern. I'll take second place in the WBC for a World Series.
Now, are you somebody that would watch these games or just kind of follow them only to make sure that your guys, Trey Turner, anybody else you pull for on your team is healthy and they're okay, that they don't suffer Edwin Diaz or Jose Altuve did?
No. I'm not going to do that. I mean... I'm going to say, I hope somebody doesn't get hurt. But, I mean, the guy can get hurt, in an exhibition game. Guy can get hurt. I've seen stories of guys who feel tightness in their elbow throwing a bullpen session. And the next thing you know, they're getting their ulnar collateral ligament repaired. So, look at Paige Becker. She's the best basketball player perhaps in the country. I mean, I know Leah Boston's amazing. But Becker tears her knee in preseason. They ain't even playing a game. She can't play for UConn the whole year. Could cost UConn a national championship, because if she were playing, they'd be unstoppable. You say, okay, you're not allowed to work out before the season starts? It's crazy. Justin Moore of Villanova tore his Achilles tendon in the waning minutes of the Final Four game last year. Does that mean that you don't play in the waning moment? Injuries happen. The Diaz thing was a fluke. You can't say don't play baseball, because then if people start to play baseball and get injuries in the exhibition season, then we start to say, well, let's shorten that or eliminate that. And you really do need it.
Hey, Michael, we talked to you, I think it was last week or 2 weeks. Anyway, your comment was you thought that this could be maybe the most upset-ridden NCAA tournament that we've seen in a long time, and there were some pretty good upsets. How's your bracket, and are you enjoying it?
Well, I'm absolutely enjoying it, and it's like when you see Fairleigh Dickinson leading Purdue in the late moments of a game, you don't start to say, "Oh, go Purdue! I hope my bracket looks good." No, you're like, "Come on, man, let's have some craziness." So, Arizona, Princeton, I said that I might even have said it on this program that I thought Arizona might be a team that could even beat Alabama and go with the Final Four. I didn't pick them in the brackets I was in, but I was happy as heck when Princeton won, and Princeton's Penn's number one rival. And I've been a Penn fan since I was 7 years old. So this is fun. I like watching it. But as I always say, the first weekend is about the madness. And now it's about picking the champion.
Who did you pick to win it all?
Alabama. I went chalk again. I had Kansas last year. And as I said, it was like remember in math when you would get the right answer, but you didn't show your work, so you wouldn't get full credit? that happened to me. So that's kind of like what my bracket was last year. I happened to have the right answer, but on the way it was just disastrous.
Hey, we've been talking a little bit about this here in Seattle, about them possibly drafting a defensive tackle. Guy named Jalen Carter, and just his it looks like his off-the-field stuff is maybe a little sketchy, and he got himself in trouble. And I'm just curious, if you're a GM, are you thinking, because I think that there are these coaches, I played for one, Chuck Knox, that thought, hey, I can bring this guy in, you know, I can mold him and turn him into a model citizen and things like that. But I don't know. I mean, it seems like you're throwing a lot of, and especially now, the amount of money that you're throwing on what's, you know, possibly a dumpster fire. I mean, that has to be something that maybe a little bit more comes into play a little bit more than it did, say, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Well, here's what you have to do. And this is why, you know, what we don't have, right, which is real full ideas of what these guys are. So to me, if I'm an NFL team, I find out, is this an isolated thing? Did he just happen to get a wild hair and go crazy in drag race? Or was he somebody that they say, boy, he drives wild all the time? You know, like that Alabama dude who was going 141. Okay, I don't think I've ever owned a car that could go 141. Oh, and by the way, they found like 240 grams of weed in there, right? Which I'm sure is his cousin's. So,
and a gun and $7,000 in cash.
Yeah, well, you know, he was going out for the night. But my point is, you got to find out, is this Jalen Carter one time or is this Jalen Carter all the time? If it's Jalen Carter all the time, you run it. You run. I had a coach tell me one time, trouble graduates too. So if you're trouble when you're in college, you're going to be trouble when you're in the pros. And, you know, this begs the question, what did we know about Ja Morant when he was at Murray State? Did Memphis look past some things? You know, there have been all sorts of stories about guys that were bad news in college and they became bad news in the pros. So I can't tell you whether it's a good pick or not. If this was just a one-timer, pick him because he's going to be dynamite. But if he's going to be a troublemaker, then you got an issue to deal with.
Yeah, the other part of the story with him, Michael, was his workout. He didn't work out at the combine. He went and did the, you know, measurements and all that stuff. Then the Georgia had their pro day, and he participated 9 pounds overweight, gained 9 pounds in 2 weeks. He couldn't finish his drills. He was out of breath. He was cramping. And, you know, we were talking about how do you do that when you know you're going to be on display and you're trying to present this good image in light of this terrible story that you're attached to. And we had a lot of people texting in going, well, how do you know he's not, you know, suffering some sort of guilt or dealing with this tragedy that he was involved with where people died and maybe that impacted it. And, you know, people creating a narrative as to what actually happened. We don't know. I don't know. I would assume if that's how he were feeling, that maybe his agents and the people around him would say, hey, let's not do this right now. Let's wait a week or 2 weeks, and then we'll go after it then. But what you see that in light of that story, then this is on the heels of it. He's overweight, all this. Those are a couple of big red flags, and we had KJ Wright, who played for the Seahawks, saying the same thing. That's a guy who's gone through that process himself, saying the same exact thing.
Look, if he was having some emotional issues surrounding that tragedy, I think every NFL team would have said, okay, we'll get him another time. We want to see him at full, you know, full strength. But the problem is, he, when you show up for work not ready to work, that's where it gets dicey. You can talk about the off-field stuff and say, we can change this, we can fix that. But when you show up overweight, you can't run through the drills, that's not good. And that's worse. And I'm not following this that closely because I worry about the draft Thursday night when you know the Invisible Man brings it to order and we then see who everybody's gonna pick. So I don't really follow that, but the fact that he wasn't able to finish his pro day, which is always set, you know, it's the best possible conditions, that's what I'm more concerned about.
Yeah. Hey, you bring up the Invisible Man. I assume you're referring to Roger Goodell. We were talking about a story that came out yesterday that they are set to offer him an extension. I didn't see any particulars in the way of years or money, but I think, what is he already making, 40, 45 million a year? I mean, this is a guy that I know you've had a lot of issues with. Has there been a commissioner you've liked in the NFL?
I liked Tagliabue. I really did. I thought Tagliabue had a good sense of what was, you know, what was right. I think Goodell has become such a toady for the owners. And why wouldn't they extend him? Money is up. TV ratings are still strong. They continue to get bigger and bigger contracts with their media partners. And he's a complete toady for the owners. I mean, he stands out in front and takes all the bullets. My goodness, pay him whatever he wants. Then send him back into the bunker.
Yeah. Hey, well, speaking of that, Demaryius Smith with the NFLPA, I look, I know that there needs to be representation on the labor side, and I know typically you side with labor, but he's making some accusations about the NFL, with some collusion. I feel like they've kind of – I was glad we had a union. I didn't like the leadership. I thought there was lots of things that were unnecessary. But, you know, he was trying to, you know, propose taking away the combine, being, you know, centralized in Indianapolis. And then now he's talking about – you know, they were complaining about some other things that I just thought were – kind of fruitless, and you know now he's talking about you know some of the he thinks that there's collusion and there should be guaranteed contracts. Where do you I don't know, it just seems like a lot of the things that the NFL, the union right now, that they're going after is kind of, you know, I feel like they're kind of shouting at the wind a little bit. What do you think?
Guaranteed contracts, the NFL is the only league that doesn't have guaranteed contracts. You sign for $300 million as a Major League Baseball player. Unless you retire, you get $300 million. You sign for $500 million as an NFL player, you might get half of that. It's the only league that doesn't have that, and it's because of the salary cap, which the owners put in to limit their labor costs. Demaryius Smith's job is to advocate for the players, and his job is to agitate. The one-year contracts, I don't know whether there's collusion or not. I'll tell you this. CBJ, whatever, the safety from the Eagles, Gardner, who signed with the Lions for 1 year, $8 million with about $6 million guaranteed, was offered a three-year deal with the Eagles, and he didn't like it. So he said, all right, I'm going to test free agent waters. And the Eagles said, all right, you're gone. He then ended up only signing a one-year make-good deal with the Lions. That's his fault to me. Maybe the offer wasn't high enough. He couldn't find a better one. That's not collusion, I don't think. That's a bad judgment by the player and his agent. But if Demaryius Smith has seen a bunch of one-year deals and the players are upset, he has to go out and talk about that. That's what his job is. That's what he was hired to do. Just like Goodell's hired to take the bullets for the owners.
Yeah, this one is weird. I was telling Dave earlier, I tend to fall on the side of the players more often than not. And this one is, I look at it, and you're the one that brought up the numbers of touchdown to interception ratio the past couple of years. He's missed 10 games due to injury the past couple of years. And, you know, he doesn't get faster. He doesn't get more durable as he gets older. And he's a guy that wants a Deshaun Watson type of contract, 200 and whatever million guaranteed. I get it. If I'm a GM of a team that needs a quarterback, I'm going, yes, I'd love to have this guy on my team. But at what cost? You have a salary cap to deal with. You've got to field a team. I'm dealing with a guy who may or may not be available physically, but I'm still going to owe him 200 and whatever million dollars. So the position of the GMs in this situation to me makes perfect sense. The idea of collusion and they're all conspiring, I think, is complete nonsense.
Well, and here's the other thing. Not only do you have to pay him a gigantic contract, the Ravens want two first-round picks. So if you're the Colts and you're going to buy, if you're going to sign Will Levis, all right, you're going to draft Will Levis. Okay, you draft him third or wherever they sit. You pay him his rookie contract, which is not cheap, but it's certainly a hell of a lot cheaper than 5 years guaranteed. You know, $200 million, $230 million guaranteed, and he may become good. Lamar Jackson. Everybody says, everybody should want him. No, they shouldn't. He's expensive. He costs you a first-round draft pick next year. If you're no good next year and you're sitting there saying, holy cow, we got a top-10 pick, we got to give it up. How'd you like to be the Saints right now watching the Eagles pick at number 10 because of a deal that you made with them? That's not very palatable. So, you know, if he's going to play this game and play a game of chicken, this is where having an agent would really come in handy. Because his agent could have said to him, hey, Lamar, I've talked to people. The demand isn't there for you.
Hey, last thing before we let you go, Michael, just give me a quick thought. The passing of Willis Reed, 80 years old, obviously, you know, I don't know how many kids today know who he is, but his biggest claim to fame, I believe, came in 1970 when they were facing off against the Wilt Chamberlain and the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, everybody remembers that, right? They all remember Willis Reed coming out out of the tunnel, torn tendon in his thigh, hitting those first two jumpers, and you know, leading the Knicks. I mean, everybody forgets that Walt Frazier had 38 points and 17 assists in that game, and Jerry West couldn't guard him. But what you need to know about Reed was consummate professional, great defensive player, big board man, could score, played in 7 All-Star games, Hall of Famer, would have played in more games if he hadn't gotten hurt. This was a guy who was a real stalwart in the middle. And when people talk about Wilt Chamberlain, like, oh, he didn't play against anybody. Yeah, Willis Reed, Wes Unseld, Nate Thurman, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Now, he played against nobody. There were no stars when he played, no big people in the middle. So Reed was a professional. He was a great leader. He was tough. He was also a very good guy, a gentleman. And he was the kind of guy who came out and said, look, this is probably going to damage me some, but my team needs me in Game 7 at home. And I heard Tony Kornheiser say it today on Pardon the Interruption. These sounds that came out of the crowd when he exited that tunnel was like nothing they ever heard. And I was 8. I remember watching, and I was a Lakers fan because I loved Wilt because he was a Philly guy. And I was thinking, oh, no. And then he hits those two jumpers, and I'm thinking, oh, come on, man. Then I had to go to bed because I was only 8. But it was a dramatic moment, but it's more than anything else, it showed unbelievable leadership.
He is El Hombre, Michael Bradley, with us every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. You can also follow him on Twitter, at Daily Hombre, at Daily Hombre. You can find him right there on Twitter.
I'm going to be on vacation next Tuesday, so the update will be
much
better when you come on.
I'll do the update.
Yeah, you can do it for me.
We'll send you a script. We'll send you some bullet points, and you dazzle us with the update. How about that?
Okay, no problem. I'd be happy. Listen, do it. I'd be happy to do it. I had a great time. I'll do it in my announcer voice.
All right. There you go.
Make a note of that, Lefko. We're going to send him bullet points for the 5 o'clock update next Tuesday. Michael, have a great weekend, my friend. We will talk to you next week.
So long, suckers.
There you go. Michael Bradley with us. And seriously, make a note of that. That'd be fun to have him. We'll just send him some sports headlines and see how he does. We'll play it for you when you come back.
Unleash him.
All right. Coming up, a former Seahawk defensive player has a brand new home. We'll talk about that and some other big news in the NFL as well. We'll talk about that next as we continue live from Peoria, Arizona, live at the Mariners Spring Training Complex. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It is Wyman and Bob live from the Mariners Spring Training Complex out here in Peoria, Arizona. We got the Rockies out here next to us on the field next to us, getting ready for their game tonight with the San Diego Padres. So they've gotten out here warming up. We saw Chris Bryant walk by us, and all of us went, wow, he's a lot bigger than I thought. We all looked him up.
Maybe it's the shoes.
Yeah, 6'5".
We're all going to keep his bio up, too, on our computer, so he walks by. He'll see us, just his face.
We can fanboy when he walks by. I go, hi. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, I saw, you know, I don't know why. You pull up his page, and it's always puts his wife's name, you know, his spouse.
Oh, really?
I was going to say, how's Jessica Delp? The former Jessica Delp. That wouldn't be cool.
Probably not.
Yeah, don't ask.
Might
about
be poorly
my wife.
Received.
Yeah.
But yeah, he came walking by. They're out there warming up. The Padres and the who share a complex with the Mariners are going to be taking on the Rockies. So the Rockies right next to us walk. I saw them all. They would stop and look at this mural next to us. It's got all the Mariner greats. I saw a couple guys that are standing there looking, pointing, and, you know,
talking about
probably quizzing like I was quizzing you. Can you name all those guys?
I think they're probably going, a couple of them are going, yeah, I played with that guy. Remember. You know, him, tell him some story about, or they're, you're right, they might be saying, do you remember Randy Johnson?
Yeah.
I thought they were pointing at us. They're like, look at those guys. Sitting here talking to a wall.
Yeah, we're facing a door. But, yeah, so the Rockies out there getting ready. Meanwhile, some transactions happening in the world of the NFL. The the former first-round pick of your Seattle Seahawks, L.J. Collier, has agreed to a one-year deal with the Cardinals. I still haven't seen any details on the financial aspect of it, but anybody who signs a one-year deal, that's a prove it, dear. That's you're playing for your next multi-year deal, hopefully, for anybody.
I'm pretty sure it's like $1.05 million is the – I don't know if that's still the veteran minimum, but I can't imagine that it's much more than that.
Why do you think it didn't work with him? What do you – You know, he was here for 4 years. He was a first-round pick, a lower. He wasn't top 10. He was, you know, he's in that spot where a lot of people say, it's kind of a second-rounder. But technically, first-round pick of the Seahawks. He was a pick that was questioned by some people. We remember our guy Brian Baldinger loved him coming out of the draft. Other people were like, why did you go with that guy? You could have gone with this guy. Ultimately, it just didn't really work out here. He didn't really have an impact. So is that – He wasn't a guy I heard about being out of shape or, you know, no attitude or anything. By all accounts, a really good guy. But if we're just assessing who he was as a football player with his team, it wasn't happening. It didn't happen for him.
I think John Schneider talked about it. I thought this is one of the more memorable things that we've heard from John when we talk to him every Thursday up till the draft, is that, you know, it's not just about the player and who he is right now. It's about his makeup and does he have the ability to, you know, you're sort of projecting, like, what's it going to look like 3 years from now, 4 years from now? Part of that is that you have to be able to put, and I don't ever question somebody's toughness. I just question how they handle certain things, and one of them is injuries. You have to be able to handle things. I thought that was kind of the problem with Penny. I thought he lost way too much time with an injured finger. Mm-hmm. You know, and then when he came back, that affected him. And, you know, you have to be able to play through that kind of stuff. And I think LJ, I think his rookie year, he had some kind of an ankle thing. And, you know, and that set him back. You know, it's the same thing with Rashad Penny, that, you know, he got going, then he gets an injury. And then not only do you get time out of, being injured and, you know, healing and all that, when you come back, you're not the same. You have to kind of start over again. And I felt like that was kind of the story with LJ Collier. He wasn't, you know, hurt as often and didn't have all these little nicks like Penny did. But he did have some of those things, and I just thought he wasn't able to handle it.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, who knows? You know, I'd love to hear the breakdown of what they saw when they drafted him. We expect him to be this kind of player, and he's going to be able to do these kind of things, and here's what stood out. And it just never materialized. And listen, that's the risk you take in the draft. It's a crapshoot, whether it's top five. We see busts every year in the top five, bottom of the draft, what have you. But ultimately a pick that just didn't happen here. And he moves on to the Cardinals for a year, and we'll see, you know, is he going to be one of those guys that all of a sudden when the Seahawks play him twice a year, he looks like a player that you never saw before? Like, wait a minute, where did this version come from? Maybe their defense fits him better. I have no idea.
I'm just going to say no, Bob.
No. he's playing for his next contract. This is a prove it year.
Right.
So you should never find a more inspired version of him than this guy here.
You're right. You're right. And also going to a place where you get a clean slate.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff, you know, all the negativity, and I don't mean, I guess, in that sense, more that like the bad things that have happened to you, how you haven't reacted to something or whatever, doesn't follow you. You get some of it does. I mean, look, they've looked at you on film and everything, but you know, how you are, how you handle things like that. I mean, you know, that stuff doesn't really go with you. So you do get a clean slate. It's just that I don't think that that's going to happen just in general to the Seahawks very often, because it's a great environment. It's a great franchise. You get everything you need in Seattle, mm-hmm. including coaching. And, you know, I think Pete ensures that with great assistance. And, yeah, so that's why I'm just going to say, no, I don't think he's going to – there's not much of a chance that he goes there other than, you know, he gets a fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as it – he was given an opportunity here.
A lot of opportunity. Yeah, that's not one – We've had players in the past, and we've talked about this, whether it's with the Mariners or with the Seahawks, that for whatever reason, a guy just didn't click here, and then they go somewhere else, and they start playing really well, and you're like, well, he didn't really get enough of opportunity here. The Mariners do this, that, or they blame the organization, and sometimes it is just a different voice in their ear, or maybe it is something different about how they ask him to play in that organization, whether we're talking baseball or football. So, yeah, maybe it clicks for him, and we'll find out. But I tend to lean your direction. Go, yeah, I don't know that that's going to happen, but good for him. Signs a one-year deal. And then Marquise Goodwin, who was a guy that I think we all looked at and went, you know, you like what you saw out of him. He didn't put up huge numbers, but he's a guy who certainly showed that he still has some game left. He's got speed, did some nice things out there. He's paying a visit to the Cleveland Browns. And no update on that as to whether he's going to come to a deal, but he's out there to be had. I don't know what the Seahawks' level of interest is, but there's no obvious third receiver on this team right now. And it feels like there hasn't been. It felt like it was Freddie Swain. That felt like that was the guy who was kind of, I don't know if that was a plan, but he kind of became the third guy for a while. He moved on. It wasn't incredibly productive, but it just seemed like he was the guy that was out there when they had a three-receiver set. He was that guy.
Wasn't that his rookie year, too?
I believe so.
Yeah, because before that, David Moore was pretty much the third number three guy.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. He was good. I like David Moore.
Yeah, just solid, really just solid productive guy. And then last year, your third best receiver was Noah Fant, your tight end. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Marquise Goodwin is a guy I think certainly has some value. I'm not sure where the Seahawks fall on that, but he's paying a visit to the Browns.
Yeah, I'll miss him, and I do think he is a guy who could possibly, go, I don't want to say go crazy, but be a good, solid, a better player than he was here and put up better numbers. I still believe in him athletically. I mean, the time's ticking on him. He's 32 years old, but that guy still looks so athletic. To me, anyway, and he had a couple of games where I just felt like if they threw him the ball maybe a little bit more and he got more opportunities, he was going to produce, because I felt like every time he got his hands on the ball, he was pretty dynamic. You could see the speed there. He's got a lot of shiftiness, and yeah, I'm going to miss him, and I'll be bummed I'm going to be bummed if it happens to LJ Collier. I don't think it will, but I do think Marquise Goodwin has a chance to be better than he was here.
All right. Reminder, our coverage of Mariners spring training is presented by Alaska Airlines and Kitsap Credit Union. Coming up, there's been plenty we've already experienced in our time out here, a lot of conversations. We'll go through some of that coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It is Wyman and Bob live from the Mariners Spring Training Complex out here in Peoria, Arizona. Seattle Sports on 710. We got the Mariners Cactus League report coming up at the top of the hour at 6 o'clock. But before that, just a little programming note for tomorrow. We'll have Scott Service. We'll have Aaron Goldsmith joining us. And then hopefully a chance to catch up with Andres Munoz and maybe Matt Brash as well. So, yeah, big show coming your way tomorrow. Hopefully the weather will be a little bit. We were just looking at the weather. It was dumping when we got here. It has stopped raining, but it's gotten pretty cool. It's a little chilly out here, but it's not raining, so that's good. But tomorrow I have a high of 64. The weather said, what does it say? It's 59 or 60 right now?
Yeah, I think it's 60 right now.
Oh, scorching 60.
Solid 60. This is spring in Arizona.
Yeah, weird.
So I've heard.
Not what I've heard about. Yeah. Not what I've heard about.
By the way, Matt Brash tomorrow, I want everybody to be rest assured that I'm not jinxing him. Because, you know, I was talking about, like, I'm sorry, the guy at Driveline said best cutter or slider in MLB history. Like, that's worth noting. And so I brought him up a few times, and they're like, well, it sounds like, you know, you've got a new Cody Barton.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's not the case. Well, I'll ask Matt, though, when he sits down with us.
So you think
you ever heard of Cody Barton?
Matt, I heard you have the greatest pitch ever. That's that's pretty cool, right?
That's awesome.
God, I'm so stupid. So we'll see how Dave comports himself with Matt Brash, who may potentially be with us tomorrow.
Playing for Brent Stecker's team.
Yeah, that's right.
The Canadians.
We'll talk to him about that decision and everything else. And so far, for anybody that's missed what's happened in the first 2 days here, we've had a lot of great conversations. We spoke with Jerry DePoto and Logan Gilbert and Cooper Hummel and Harry Ford. It's been very cool. You know, so far the standout for me, I could talk to Jerry all day. And we talked to him for like 10, 15 minutes after we got done taping with him. But as far as a player, Cooper Hummel was a very pleasant surprise. I'd never spoken to him, certainly. He's a new addition. He's the guy that, in case you forgot, came over in the trade for Kyle Lewis. Kyle Lewis heads to Arizona. He comes here. His level of enthusiasm and just genuine excitement about being a part of a team that he grew up rooting for. His favorite team was the Seattle Mariners, and he talked about, you know, having his wall painted navy blue with their mural on it, their logo, and getting autographs from Ichiro as a kid and all these people, and he still wants to get an autograph from Mike Cameron. You know, he's a member of the team. I mean, to grow up really idolizing a team and players the way that he did the Mariners, and now you are a Mariner. You're a Seattle Mariner. And hearing that come out in his answers and his voice was really cool for me.
Well, I got to say, you know, and the question Lefko put, who's the best interview so far? It's a tough one because Harry Ford was unbelievable. He was just very unusual for a kid to be that young.
Just turned 20 last month.
Yeah, and just very on top of it, so mature and everything. But Cooper Hummel, before we went on, he was sitting there, and I didn't know what his facial expression meant, but he had this big smile, and he was kind of looking at you, and then looking at me, and looking at you, like, you know. And now that we hear about how he grew up just being a Mariner fan, I felt like he was thinking, I'm getting ready to go be interviewed as a Seattle Mariner. Yeah. This is like what I thought I would happen when I was a little kid with all the, you know, he said he had beer steins with the Mariner,
Mariner
logos.
Trash can. And,
right. So, that you're right. That was really cool to see a guy who, and that was pretty stressful. I mean, he gets married. They buy a house down here because he was, you know, down here in Arizona.
Playing for the Diamondbacks.
Although he'll probably hang on. I would recommend he hang on to his house. You're going to want to come down here in the summertime, when the season's over, just to get away from, you know, the rain and stuff. But that probably was the best one, just because you could see the genuine just joy on his face, just by virtue of him being a Seattle Mariner.
Yeah, and we're so used to talking to players who are all great guys and everything, but you can tell the difference between a guy who's been in the league and has established themselves, and there's a calmness and I've done this, and we're just preparing for the season, taking it one game at a time. You know, it doesn't make them bad guys or anything, but they've done it. They've been through this a million times. They're not dazzled by anything, really. They're just kind of talking about their game, whereas he just seemed like wide-eyed, and he seemed like he was 21 years old. You know, he's older than that, so he's
never stopped smiling.
27, 28, I think, something like that. So it was just cool. It was very genuine. And again, I couldn't recommend that conversation more highly. If you get a chance, you didn't get a chance to hear it, head to SeattleSports.com and check that out, because it was. I think you'll be excited. You'll be rooting for him. We'll see what happens. Well, he's killing it in spring. He's really playing great in spring. We'll see what happens in the regular season. Maybe he's a stud. Maybe he's a utility guy. Who knows what happens with him? But it's just it's cool to see him have some success in spring, playing for a team that he grew up just idolizing and worshiping, and hearing him say there's still people he wanted to get autographs from here in the building. You know, because Franklin Gutierrez is part of the staff.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Cameron's part of the staff. All these guys, he's popping off Ichiro's stats and, you know, just off the top. Well, you know, that's the reason why I'm out here with Ichiro. He's out there, 262 hits in a season, career average over 300. I mean, he's just spitting them out like a super fan. And that was just really cool to hear from a big leaguer.
Yeah. Well, and he had a really awesome catch in right field.
Great running catch
that we watched. Yeah, where it looked like, wow, these kids got speed.
And he's a catcher,
too.
Well, he's in everything. That was the other part that stood out in the interview about his gloves, all the gloves he carries in his bag.
Well, and that's kind of important with Dylan Moore with his low bleep strain.
Yeah.
That's been, you know, what is it, 2 to 4 weeks, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a big one. That was tough. I think we talked to Service about that. And, you know, he's like, yeah, you really rely on a guy like Dylan Moore. So, great story. Couldn't root for him more, like you said. But the Harry Ford interview was, and all that with, I think, maybe our favorite guy, Logan Gilbert. Logan is just, he seems like a guy that I'd be friends with if we were on, you know, on the same team. I've just loved talking to him over the years. He's got a great sense of humor. He's one of those guys that people, it seems like his teammates like to give him a hard time because they like him.
Yeah, he takes it really well.
Yeah.
He just is like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine. You know, he rolls with it.
And he's funny, too.
Yeah, he's very meticulous about what he does. He's always trying to improve. He talks about he's asked 8 million times about the bag of gadgets that he has to help. And I love that. That, to me, is an awesome sign of a guy. How do I get better? Oh, this will help? All right, I'll try it. That'll help? Okay, I'll try that. He's just all these different gadgets, and he'll replace them as he gets new ones. And
that's all extra credit work.
That's right. You don't have to write that into his contract like Kyler Murray. He's out there doing that on his own.
That's right.
So, yeah, very cool stuff. Very cool stuff. So, again, if you haven't been able to catch any of those, I would head to seattlesports.com on the podcast page and check them all out. They'll be up there waiting for you to check out if you haven't heard it, and some really just good stuff. Our thanks to Logan Gilbert, Jerry DePoto, Adam Ray was with us here in person, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, all joining us today. Head to seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It's all waiting for you right there. You got the Mariners Cactus League report coming up next. We're back tomorrow right here, live from the Mariners Spring Training Complex in Peoria, Arizona, with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.